This is Talking of Books with Isabel Abuhul, John McDonald, and the rest of the team.
In association with the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature.
Only on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Welcome back to Talking of Books, and we've moved into our next section, which is our Young Reviewer section. And I'm joined here in the studio with Maya and Shahil. So thank you so much for being here with us today to talk about a brilliant book. And if you could just tell our listeners a little bit about yourself. So Maya, what school do you go to?
I go to DIA. It's a really great school. There's so many different cultures. I feel like I'm in the center of the world with all the cultures surrounding me. I'm 11 and I'm about to turn 12 on December 29th, which is kind of a long way away.
Yeah. Are you counting down the days to that big 12?
Maybe.
Yeah. And what's your teacher's name at school?
Miss Darren. I love her.
Oh, that's good. And Shahil, what school do you go to?
I go to Delhi Pratt School, Dubai. I'm in grade 7A, and I'm going to be 13 and on 7 June.
Oh, wow. Exciting. Turning into the teenager years. That is an exciting time. And how long have you guys both been here in Dubai, Maya?
I've lived here all my life, really? Even though I'm from Jordan and Palestine. But, yeah.
Brilliant. And Shahil?
I spent 6 years in Malaysia and 6.5 years here.
Brilliant. What a lovely cosmopolitan life you've led. Exciting. And the book you're going to talk to us about today is Beetle Boy. Is that correct?
Yeah.
So Maya, do you want to start us off? What do you love about this book?
I'm kind of scared about beetles. If I don't like them, but if they touch me, I will freak out. But that book kind of like said, don't be freaked out. They're nice things.
Yeah. And do you know the author, M.G. Leonard? She is scared of creepy crawlies herself. And she actually said in an interview, just like you, that she's so scared of creepy crawlies and she can't bear them. So that inspired her to write a book putting beetles in a positive light to try and help herself overcome her fear. Do you think perhaps you wouldn't be so scared if you had a beetle as friendly as Darkus's beetle?
Maybe, but I still wouldn't let it touch me.
No. What about you, Shahil? What are your thoughts?
I'd be okay with it, because as long as it doesn't have more than 6 legs, I'd
is that
fine.
The line? 6 legs.
You don't like centipedes, do you? You were just telling us before we went on air.
Yeah.
You don't like the fact they've got all these little legs and it's sort of ongoing.
So really scary. They're called myriapods. Which is part of invertebrates, and then when we learned about it in school, so the teacher showed us a picture of a centipede getting eaten by a Venus flytrap, so I squealed really hard.
Oh, that's a very good intro to my question about Beetle Boy by M.G. Leonard, and I'm sure we've got a copy back at our offices, so a lucky winner can win one copy of Beetle Boy if they get chosen and they answer the question correctly. So this is a true or false question, all right? The question is, beetles undergo metamorphosis as part of their life cycle. Is that true or false? Send in your answers to 4001 and please put your name. And if you are a parent who's going to be answering this on behalf of one of your children, please put your children's age. Let them answer it. We don't mind if people look on the internet or use their iPad or check with Wiki. That's perfectly acceptable. We just want you to know the right answer. So the question is, beetles undergo metamorphosis as part of their life cycle. Is it true or is it false? 4001 and please put your names. So we checked with our young reviewers, and of course they knew the answer to that because they're very good at science. And great that you are, that you obviously, as well as being a reader, Shahil, you are very interested in science.
Yeah.
So have you got any idea of what you want to be when you grow up yet?
I want to be an engineer.
An engineer. Maya, what about you?
I want to be an author tech, which isn't a real thing, but I'm going to be one. It's like an author and an architect, because like, I enjoy drawing and I enjoy writing and I can't choose one.
You can be an author illustrator. Mm. There's, I think you met Candy Gawley, didn't you, who was here at the 2017 Emirates Airline Festival of Literature, and she is an author illustrator.
Yeah.
And what did you think of Candy and her books?
She's so creative, and I love how she converts like myths into a real modern setting. It inspires me to write more, and I want to be setting that modern area where you feel like you're falling into the book.
Great. And I think you've read some of Candy Gawley's books, haven't you, Shaheel? Yeah. Yes. What did you think of them?
They were really nice. The inspiration is really good. For Shine, I started reading Shine, and it is also about this girl who cannot speak. So I won't spoil it for you. It's better if you read it yourself.
Yes. You were nearly famous, Shaheel, because didn't Candy put you on her own Facebook?
Yes, she did.
Yeah.
Oh, amazing.
She mentioned him on her Facebook, said how brilliant he was.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, she was an absolutely inspirational children's author, and we were so lucky to have her. In fact, we always have a brilliant group of children's authors each year. And 2018, our 10th anniversary, is no exception. The lineup for children and young adults is just beyond belief at the moment. I keep looking at it and thinking, oh my goodness, this is when young people get to know who's coming next year. I can't tell you, obviously. We announced that in October, but it is a really, really fantastic lineup for next year.
And a great way to find out all of the information is through our social media outlets. So you need to go on to @EmiratesLitFest, and then there's Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and on Facebook it's @EmiratesLitFest. And then there's @ELFDubai, and that's on Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, and Facebook. And it's /Emirates Literature Foundation. And so that's where I assume lots of announcements will be made, and we'll find out lots of exciting information about next year's festival.
Yes, as it gets into, we tend to announce the lineup of authors and the programme around the 25th of October. Mm. So then you can sort of scream, shout hooray, jump a dance of joy, whatever. So we're getting great answers, and thank you for putting the ages as well on this question about beetles and metamorphosis. So good to know that.
I love some of the spelling, the Beatles as in the Beatles, the band.
Yes,
fantastic.
Yes, yeah.
They do go through metamorphosis.
They do. We don't check on spelling talking of books. I've always felt actually that for children who write creatively, it doesn't matter if they have spelling.
No.
You know, I'm probably teachers think that's a wrong thing. But what is important is that they are able to write down their creative thoughts. And, I've met many, many adult authors who are almost dyslexic, can't spell to save their life. But that doesn't stop them being great authors.
No.
So what I'm saying to you is, don't worry if spelling is not your strong point. Don't let that stop you writing, because any author can have an editor, can't they?
Oh, absolutely. And at our school, we're the same. We obviously, it's important to learn your spellings and all of that stuff if you want to improve in that way. But creativity is the key all the time. Creativity. Get those ideas and the thoughts and as you described, diving into a book or feeling like you're in a book. That's the kind of mind that's going to write really fantastic creative work. And all the other stuff is extra and can be created, can be edited and all of that afterwards.
Yes, I mean, it doesn't stop you. You know, these things shouldn't be a hurdle to you becoming a great writer, because with spell check now, with all of the tools that we have at our fingertips, spelling can be put right. I'm not saying that I think often people either have got a way, it's like being tone deaf or not. So I can look at words and I know they're spelt wrongly. And I've always, from when I was quite young, able to do that. Mm. But you either can or you can't. But it doesn't matter. What I'm saying is, it's what's in your head. Let that onto the page and don't worry too much about spelling. What do you think, Shaheel?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And even when I was reading, I sometimes, instead of saying darkness, I said darkness.
Yes, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. No. And you know, that's what our brain does. It leads us to believe, because we've got the images in our mind. So you would, instead of darkest, you would read darkness, because that's a proper word. Darkest isn't. It's a name. So those kind of things, we do misread them, because, and it's like there's this little test, isn't there, where they put two thes.
Oh, yes.
And you can, so they'll give you this passage and they'll say, read it, and actually you read it in your head and you don't notice that there are two others. And so people who proofread often read backwards. They'll read backwards through the things. That way you're more likely to pick up errors.
Yeah. Absolutely. So coming back to your book that you guys are here to talk about, who was your favourite character?
I like Novak Cutter. I'm not sure how to pronounce the name. It's just kind of complicated for me. I like her because she's a, like, film star, and she just has so much confidence in herself. Mm. I want to be like that.
Great.
And she has, like, the jewel beetle, and I kind of think, like, the beetles in the book are a representation, kind of their personality.
Like, is this Lucretia? Lucretia Cutter?
It's her daughter, isn't it?
Is it her daughter?
Yeah.
Because Lucretia's the naughty one.
Yeah.
Is that right? The evil one. We're going to take a short break, and then we're going to come back and also ask Shaheel who's his favourite character in Beetle Boy by M.J. Leonard. M.G.
Young Reviewer, young minds, big ideas. From Agatha Christie to Jeffrey Archer, we've got it covered. Talking of books.
In association with the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature.
On Dubai Eye 103.8. Now, back to the team.
Welcome back to Talking of Books. We are in our Young Reviewers section, and I'm joined here today by with Shaheel and Maya. Thank you both for being here. And they are championing a fantastic book called Beetle Boy by M.G. Leonard. And so we're going to start with a clip of M.G. Leonard herself talking about the stimulus and the idea for this book.
Beetles are possibly the most staggering creature on the planet. They are the most prolific species. They come in every single colour and size. They're like superheroes. They've got different skills. Some of them can shoot acid out of their butts. Some of them can lift heavy weights. Some of them can fly. Some of them can burrow. Some of them can chew through concrete. And I suddenly thought, I want to write a story about these amazing insects so that other people understand how amazing they are too. Darkest looked down. The giant insect was sitting right at his feet. And before he could think about whether it was a good idea or not, he was reaching down to touch the tip of its horn. It was sharp. "Whoa, you're cool," he said, feeling his heart thumping in his chest. Mesmerized, Darkus watched the beetle scramble up from the road onto the pavement, its body glistening like wet oil. The main beetle in Beetle Boy is a rhinoceros beetle called Baxter. He's a Calchas soma. And you can tell he's a rhinoceros beetle because of this really prominent horn with a sharp spike and these two tusks on its thorax. My fear of insects was an important part of the writing process, trying to describe a beetle in a way that made it friendly and warm and beautiful. And as you can see, oh my God, they are so beautiful.
So fantastic. And that was M.G. Leonard, the author of this brilliant book that you guys have brought in today for us and to talk about. And before we left for the break, we were discussing our favourite characters. And Maya, you said that yours was Novak. And Shaheel, who is your favourite character?
Personally, I loved Baxter. Okay. Because he, first of all, he's really friendly. And he was quickly attached to Darkus, and also he had very good leadership qualities.
Mm. Just for our listeners, do you want to explain what Baxter is or who he is?
Baxter is a rhinoceros beetle, and Darkus's first encounter was him when he was at his uncle Max's house.
Mm.
He was on the window.
And where did Baxter come from when he first found him? Do you remember? Two men were running out of the house, and where did Baxter fall from?
Oh,
yes, Maya knows. Where was it?
In the childhood, yeah, of one of the neighbours.
Yeah.
And then Darkus was wondering how on earth he got there.
Yeah, because he's huge. He sits on his shoulder and fills up quite a bit of the shoulder, doesn't he? He fell from a trouser leg of one of the guys we find out's actually one of the baddies, don't we?
Oh my goodness, yeah. It sounds incredible.
It's a really fantastic book. Do you want to tell us a bit about, so for people who haven't read it, how would you describe the storyline?
On the back of the book, it actually says describing the book in 3 words, and I really like that about books. But in my own words, I'd say it was an adventure, funny, and awesome.
Brilliant. Shahil, what would you say?
The book was very good, and I would strongly recommend it to anybody who has fear of insects, because, first of all, it will kind of push your fear away. And also, it will give you some liking for a beetle or other insects. Mm.
Does Baxter, the rhinoceros beetle, speak? How do he and Darkus communicate?
Well, he moves his body, and then that's the way he understands that. He says that, yeah, I take this as a yes. And also, this is not only there for Baxter's beetle, but, Darkus's beetle, but... It's also there for others. Other beetles have their own way to communicate. Mm.
What did you think about that, Maya? The way that Darkus was able to understand them?
He wasn't really sure of that at first, so he did like an experiment. He took like one normal beetle and Baxter, and he said, fly up in the air. And Baxter was the only one saying... like kind of doing the order, but he doesn't just do orders on will. He'd do them if he thinks like they're good or something, because they're genetically enhanced beetles. And yeah,
Are they genetically enhanced beetles?
Yeah. Mm.
In the book, what did you think about that? That they'd been genetically enhanced.
I wasn't so sure they should do that, because beetles are one of the most important creatures on the planet, and if you just go and enhance them, they might die out, and human civilization wouldn't last so long without beetles. And I was thinking, maybe they should just take one beetle, try it out, and if it works, do it on like about half of it. Mm-hmm. And if they all die out from a side effect or something, just the other half is all fine, and they're free. Mm-hmm.
That's a really good point. The question for one of our listeners to win a copy of Beetle Boy by M.G. Leonard is, what is it? Beetles undergo metamorphosis as part of their life cycle. True or false? Send in your answers to 4001 and please put your name and you will go in the draw. And Elaine, our producer, will press the magic button towards the end of the show. So, beetles undergo metamorphosis as part of their life cycle. Is that true or false? So how big is this rhinoceros beetle? How many centimetres do you think it is, Shahil? Just in your mind, how would you see it? Would it be like 12 centimetres, 8 centimetres?
I think it would be about maybe 7 to 9 centimetres.
7 to 9. Do you agree with
really
that, Maya?
Yeah, because in the book it gives some clue, because it takes up most of its
shoulder.
It takes most of Darkus's shoulder, and he has to carry him around in a jam jar. So I'd say he's 9, 7, maybe even 12 centimetres.
Mm. Oh. And what, at the end, can we say that good... overcomes evil, would you say?
Yeah.
Yes.
In my opinion, at every single time, good stuff will happen, even in the worst of times. It can be, even if your family's starving, you'd find like a penny on the ground and you can buy a corn cob or something and you can feed your family with it.
Okay, so that's important, isn't it? I think in books of storybooks, that the end is always where we see that good overcomes evil, because we haven't really spoken about Shahil about the evil character.
The evil character is Miss Cutter.
Yes.
And everyone is afraid of her because, well, she's really scary, and she will order anyone how she wants to do it, and she also kidnapped Darkus's father.
So that's where he's disappeared, because right at the beginning of the book, Darkus's father has disappeared, hasn't he? And he doesn't know where he's gone. And that's part of the mystery that is going to be discovered over the course of the book. And does Baxter, the rhinoceros beetle, help discover?
He is like one of the main characters in the book, and he does his part really well.
And he even gets other beetles to help as well. There's a brilliant part at the beginning where Darkus has been tied to a chair, hasn't he? And he commands all the other beetles. He does something. He makes some clicking sounds or something. And then they all scurry over and chew through the ropes. So it's brilliant.
Oh, that's amazing.
And the neighbours, they just think he's been eaten alive by the beetles.
Yeah, they do. They trick them, don't they?
Mm. And also that Baxter had actually given one of the first clues. When Max and Darkus and Margaret, they went into the Cleopatra collection of Miss Cutter, he went into the air conditioning vent. Baxter had run away, but he didn't want to tell to his uncle Max. So afterwards, he's like, "How can we remove the air conditioner vent?" And when they removed it, Baxter crawled inside because he was the smallest, and he got the specs.
Yes, and that's how they knew that something untoward had happened because his glasses had been left behind. Mm. Yeah.
Oh well. So lots of clues, and we're going to be rounding up our young reviewers session in. Less than a minute. So Maya, what would you say to our listeners out there? Why is reading so important?
In the age of iPads and computers and games and video games and all that, reading is important because you're not stuck into the iPad glued to a screen, because it's so important to open your eyes sometimes and then look at the world from another perspective than just through a screen.
And that's what books and reading does for you, Maya. Brilliant.
And also, reading books, it will kind of means boost your imagination. You see, it's also sometimes good to read books without illustrations, as you can think of it yourself, how it is.
So you see it, they say that seeing it in your mind's eye. So your mind has its own eye, and when you read a book, that picture's painted with words in your mind, and you see it, and you sometimes then can go and see a film and you think, that's not how it should look, that's not the character, that's not the voice, because you've already got your own impression from the writer. So you have both been brilliant young reviewers today, Maya and Shaheel. Thank you so much for coming in, and thank your parents for bringing you here on the first day of Ramadan, and happy reading from us on Talking of Books.
Thank
you so much. We're going to take a short break, and then we'll be in our Arab World segment straight after this.
Young reviewer, young minds, big ideas. From Shakespeare to Tolstoy, Stephen King to Danielle Steele, this is Talking of Books.
In association with the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature.
On Dubai Eye 103.8. Now, back to the team.
Welcome back to Talking of Books, and I'm now joined in the studio by Hen Said. So thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
And you are going to be talking about a book called A Small Death by Mohammed Hassan Alwan. And do you want to just start by telling us a little bit about it and why you picked
it? A Small Death is actually the book that won the International Prize for Arabic Fiction for 2017 this year, and it's written by Mohammed Hassan Alwan, is a Saudi author. The book is why I wanted to talk about this book, because first of all, International Prize for Arabic Fiction is actually the more prestigious prize in the Arab world, and they choose books, the best books in the Arab world. And also, Mohammed Hassan Alwan is one of my favorite authors. This is his 9th book, and he usually write about social issues, but this book is a bit different. So this book is the life of Ibn Arabi. He was a philosopher and a spiritual leader also in the old days. So he talks about his life and in that book. Mm. So basically it's a historical fiction book, but it also a spiritual side of it. Now, so many people thought this is going to be like 100% spiritual book, but it's more about the life, the daily life of Ibn Arabi, and that's where a lot of people were talking about it in a different way. Some people like it so much, and some people didn't like the book. I like the book. I would like to start with this. I mean, A Small Death is a saying by Ibn Arabi, was said, love is a small death. So he took the title from that. And Ibn Arabi is very famous with her saying, different saying about love, spirituality and all that. The book is 590 pages, and that might be scary for people, but it's really it's a beautiful language, and it's very easy to read in a way. It takes you with it to reading it. And it's about the travel of Ibn Arabi. And that's what Muhammad Hassan Alwan said in one of his interviews, that he loved the story of Ibn Arabi because of the travel rather than about the spirituality. So he concentrated on the travel. Mm-hmm. And Muhammad Hassan Alwan wrote a book before that called Migrants. So he's very interested in traveling. And then he wrote that book, the nonfiction book, about people, why people travel. So that part is where he looked at Ibn Arabi in this part of his life rather than in his spirituality. But of course, there's a lot of spirituality journeys in that book also.
And in
with
this
that.
Book, do we get a real sense of the travel? Is it described in such a way that you can really imagine it?
Yes, exactly. It's really, really described very well. So he travels so many places, from Azerbaijan, Turkey, which Anatolia called at that time, to Damascus, to Iraq, to Saudi, Jeddah at that time. And in his books, you can see, actually, you can live with him at these old days. He even describes some of the pages, the dresses they dress, like especially when his father, he said, when he was young, he described his father what he wears. And from his clothes, he know that if his father is going to meet the Sultan, or he's going to the souk, or he's going to his job. So it's different that. And also tell you a lot about their like food, about their like description of the cities. So you actually move with him with these his travels.
I love those kind of immersive books where you really feel like you're there, and you've kind of come away from it with a whole new education on a totally different time.
Exactly. And besides, as I said, his languages was really nice and pure and poetry, but again, he used some old words that was not used these days, but it's also like make you to want to know what it is, what that means about their clothes, of their food, or these certain things. So it was a very clever way to put his work together also. And that's what I liked in him, yes.
And it's set in, it starts off in 12th, in Seville, doesn't it? In 12th century Muslim Spain, when it was a part of the Muslim Empire. And it starts off in quite a dramatic way, where there's this gathering of young people and they're, you know, getting up to maybe things they shouldn't, and then he has this almost Sufi revelation, doesn't he?
Yes.
And he swaps his clothes with the shepherd, and he sort of sits in a graveyard, and it is one of those sort of, you know, sort of defining moments. And then he decides, his father is so annoyed with his behavior, and you know, this young man is wasting his life and all of that, that then he decides he's going to travel. And that's the sort of the beginning of the book. But I've just read the first bit in translation, and it is a fantastic book, and I can't wait for the whole thing to come out. Now the writer, Mohammed Hassan Alwan, is from Saudi Arabia, but he's been living in Canada. He did his degree there.
He degree in engineering, in Canada.
And he seems to still be living there. I think he's still in Canada.
Yes.
He's a very engaging young man, and he's obviously, I think, breaking boundaries with this book. It's really pushing boundaries.
It is. It's different from his other books. His other books is about relationships and people and social. But this is really, crossing these boundaries. And also in his interview saying people, I know if you heard that, they say people either hate the book or love the book because what they expected from him to write about in Arabi, it was not expected at all, like what he wrote. And that's
and I think that division, that's what happens, that you feel passionately about it, you either passionately love it or passionately hate it, but either way you can't be unmoved by it. And of course we were there at the International Prize for Arabic Fiction Award last month, and it was almost, I don't think anyone could decide out of the shortlisted, was it six shortlisted writers, who was going to be the winner.
Yes, exactly.
But they were all there, all the writers were there, and it was wonderful to see his joy when he was selected as the winner of the International Prize.
The six shortlisted are very strong authors.
Year. You could have enjoyed any one of them had got the book that you would want to win. And it was a very, very tense moment really
exactly.
when they announced
yes,
the winner.
Yeah.
And in fact, they didn't. It was a bit like the Oscars when they announced the wrong one. she hadn't got the idea was that they'd put up the book that the chair of judges would hold the book up of the winning thing. And it for some reason she hadn't got it when she kept having to sort of delay. And I was thinking, oh my goodness. But then eventually someone handed it to her and.
Yeah. As he said about living in Canada, actually, something about when they asked him about the book, he said, maybe because I'm living in Canada and this cold weather, and I always feel like kind of homesick and want to know why I'm here with the traveling houses that affected me. And that's why I also encouraged him to write about this, Ibn Arabi. He also said that he actually read about 120 books about Ibn Arabi before he started writing his book. So to know everything. And that's very, very clear in the book, because it tells you so many things about the character of Ibn Arabi, like his behavior and all that. In the journey after he founded his journey and he wants to go, there is something in this spiritual journey is to find four people from all around the world, like in the north and south and west and east. And those people kind of, what they believe is like your soulmate. They will lead you to something else. And that's what in the book he goes to this journey and then to find there's those soulmates of him. And it's very beautifully written how he found, then he found this woman who he fell in love with her, but then she told him, I cannot marry you because I'm your soulmate. I mean, this is I'm the one that leads you, so I cannot marry you. That, wow. Yeah. So it's a beautiful. In the same time, it's tell you, we have two stories going together. The manuscripts that he, Ibn Arabi, wrote and then went lost through all the years. So that's in 12,012, and then also the story that it's now happening, telling about his
so
life
got
story.
Two different time zones.
To have two different time zones, and then end up in 2012 at the end, where they found a book and all that. So it's a very very. It take you between these two, but then again, it will not disturb the reading of the book. It's just continuous.
Complements each other
differently. It's all that. And it's in the book, in each chapter, he opened it with a saying for Ibn Arabi. I mean, it's very difficult to translate it, but I couldn't find it in English. one of them is love is a small death. It's mainly talk about love and spirituality and all that. And that's also bring the book. A lot of people had compared this book with their other books, like The 40 Rules of Love
by Elif
Shafak.
Yes, yeah.
They were expecting it to be like that, but it's nothing really like that.
No.
And in other books, like where they say it's finding an old historical book, like Azazir, like Yusuf Zeidan, and how this, but it's still also a different book from that. But it's the idea of how we depend on an historical event happening and then move it to the new life now. It's happening here. Also, I would like to talk about maybe the IPAF, the International Prize Fiction, which is really very important. I might not people know about this.
It is the foremost prize for Arabic literary fiction in the whole of the world. There isn't anything that has more weight. And I think it's been absolutely fantastic. It was launched in 2007 by Abu Dhabi.
2007, yes.
And with the support of the Booker Foundation in UK, who run the Man Booker. So, and they also run the International Booker Prize. So they had a lot of experience about how this would be. And I was very honoured to be invited to be one of the trustees on the board of trustees for the, as it's called, IPAF in short. And it's fascinating having that insight into how these awards are run and how complicated it is really, and all the rules and regulations.
And I think it's when they have the judges, they are very independent on, and they choose themselves.
The judges are selected, but then the board of trustees have absolutely no say in who's longlisted, who's shortlisted, as long as the entries there is someone that makes sure that the entries are valid. That's all. And then it's all over to the judges. And the judges tend to be living across the world, Plus, they always have one non-native Arab speaker who will be an academic normally or a translator.
What I also liked about this, the IPUF, is they choose the books that to be translated to English, and that it's also open the door to the English readers to read this Arabic books in English and translate it.
The most popular winner so far in translation has been The Bamboo Stalk by Saouda Sanusi, a young Kuwaiti writer, and that has been an outstanding success in Arabic, but it also has been an outstanding success in English. And it's a very, very good book for anyone because it's really focused on identity. And he really does. It's about a young man who his father's Kuwaiti and his mother's Filipino, and it is the identity of this young man. Where does he really belong? And this is a question that everyone will ask themselves, know, regardless of your parentage, your heritage, you will always come back to, who am I? You know, what makes me me? And every single person in life asks that question sometimes. But Saouda Sanusi spent time in the Philippines. He spent a long time there. He changed some of the story when he was there to make sure it reflected authentically this kind of situation. But that, I know, has been an outstanding success. And I think he's a young writer, and I think Mohammed's book as well, A Small Death, Hassan Alwan, will also be, because I think he's pushed the boundaries a long way with this book. And as you said, some people hate it because it's not exactly what they thought it would be.
Yes.
Good for him, I say.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to take a short break and we will come back to more of our Arab world news shortly after this.
From Shakespeare to Tolstoy, Stephen King to Danielle Steele, this is Talking of Books.
In association with the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature.
On Dubai Eye 103.8. Now, back to the team.
Welcome back to Talking of Books, and we're in our Arab World segment, and Hind Saeed has very kindly come in to talk about this year's IPAF winner, Mohammed Hassan Alwan, with his book, A Small Death. It will be translated into English because that's part of the International Prize for Arabic Fiction.
Hopefully as quick as possible.
Remit, as quickly as possible, because it is, I think, going to be a brilliant bestseller in both languages.
It is. I mean, it's for all generation also. It's like from young people to adult to a bit older generation also. They all love this book because it's, everyone finds something in that book that relate to it or like love it. Going back to Ibn Arabi, I mean, also like to say it's Ibn Arabi also, it's a lot of people like against him or with him since he started writing about the Sufi beliefs and spiritual beliefs, because so many people, you say that they all against him, and some people love his writing and his that. And that's also, that's a bit why people now, they have mixed feelings about this book, Ibn Arabi also.
Because of the Sufism.
Because of the Sufism.
Because there's different sort of takes on Sufism within Islam, isn't there? I mean, it's a very, very, I would say, probably a sensitive subject. But interestingly, we lost one of our greatest translators from Arabic to English in Dennis Johnson Davis. He died on the 22nd of May. He was a very dear friend, and I think all of us who knew Dennis just thought he would go on, you know, I mean, he was in his 90s. Mm. But until the end of his life, he still was interested in translation, things like that. And I can remember he converted to Islam a long, long time ago in his life, and his Islamic or Arabic name was Abdul Wadud. Okay. And I can remember talking to him about that, and he was very attracted to the Sufi branch of Islam. I can remember him telling me that. Mm. But he was someone who translated Nahki Mahfouz and so on and so forth. He was the pioneer of translation from Arabic to English and allowed it to flow out into the rest of the world. And he financed it in the beginning. He actually financed himself and he got Heinemann to undertake this series of Arab world translations. In a time when the Arab world themselves were not prepared, weren't prepared to fund it, but also didn't appreciate how important it was to get Arab literature into
a word. Yeah, he translated Najib Mahfouz, also big book. So I mean,
and Tayyip Saleh. He translated and he was a contemporary of all these wonderful, wonderful writers. He wrote He also wrote, and I was very lucky to have published some of his children's stories through Jeroboam Books. So he wrote for children as well. He had a great way of, and Kalimat Books as well has translate, has written, has published some of his books in Arabic. I did them both in Arabic and English. And he had a great output of work. He wrote short stories that were based on his time, because I think he arrived in Dubai in the 1950s and he used to translate for the oil companies. And then the late ruler, His Highness Sheikh Rashid bin Said Al Maktoum, asked him to start the, I think he started the radio here. I mean, he has sort of impacted on, so he was between Qatar and here and Egypt and Tunisia and all sorts of places across the Arab world.
Yeah, I mean, that's very nice, people reading books in English on that. Going back to Sufism also, what I like is there is Deepak Chopra. He sings this poetry of Shams Tabrizi, which is very Sufism, in a very nice way. This is one of my favorite things to read. And also people misunderstand it. Some people have a different, as you say, different views about it and how. But it's mainly is a spirituality, is your own soul with that, with your beliefs also, that the things that
I can remember when I went to Istanbul many years ago, and we were walking down one of the streets in Istanbul, and it was there was like a little sign to say that there would be something, the Sufi dancers.
Yes.
And so we went upstairs, and then it was like in a library, and there was just a small area, and they had a few chairs around.
Yes.
And we watched this, and they were genuinely entranced by their whirling.
Yeah.
And it was just incredible. And then many years later, I went to Baba Shems, where they have a show, and they had a supposed Sufi dancer who had lights. Oh, it was like lights in the costume and things like that. And I was thinking, this is not, you know, not please don't do this. It was like just...
this is the Egyptian way, which is a bit different than the Turkish way, how do it.
Yes.
Yeah,
it's, I found so this Turkish...
it's very, very...
it was so spiritual. It was really spiritual, and it was so peaceful. And it was just... we were all sort of entranced by
I watched them
the
also
movement.
In Turkey, and then they were like in... in a train station, they did this dance, and it's beautiful how they, as you say, just they just go somewhere, and then they believe, and that's when actually reading the book, it just actually take you with the book. It's as I say, 590 pages, but when you start reading, you just don't want to stop it, because as you said, Isabel, when he started going to his journey, and that's where all that. You feel like you're walking with him this journey. You're feeling his pain. He went through a lot of things in his life, and this is also being a human. Also, like, it's not being a spiritual does not mean that you will not go into pain or sadness and all that. So he lost his daughter, and he talked about his feeling how he lost his daughter, and then also when he falls in love, and when he at the end, unfortunately, he got sick and old, and he has to keep working because we couldn't have money to live, and that's where when he died he was still working at that time. So it's that's where it takes you from that the way that besides everything else he is a human, he has his spirituality, but he's a human also. And also the story always bring you so many new characters every time when he moves to a new places. We have some people come into his life and leave, and each character, like each will leave something with him and then tell us something more about him or about the city, the country they live in. And so it's very beautiful. I don't want to get into like stories itself, because it's just the beauty of the book.
Mohammed Hassan Alwan, in his book A Small Death, has really captured an enormous journey, and 500 plus pages for a book of fiction in Arabic, even in English, is quite an undertaking. But as Hen said, do not be put off. This is a book that you can savour, and particularly over the month of Ramadan, it will be a wonderful time to start reading and give yourself that treat, to read a book that has been recognised by the foremost prize in Arabic fiction as the winner, and the shortlist was outstanding this year. It really was an incredibly strong shortlist. He did exceptionally well, and he's young, and we will see more books coming out of the younger generation.
Yes, definitely. Yes, he was the youngest author actually from the shortlisted, and that what he surprised him, because we have Ismail Fahd Ismail, a very well-known Kuwaiti author, mm-hmm. and he was the oldest one.
That was the one I was hoping was going to win.
Yes,
was Al-Sabiliyat.
Al-Sabiliyat. Yes. And it's. I mean, I read the reviews about it, but it seems a very, very nice book. A lot of people really recommended this book. Also against Elias Khoury, who was also a very known author, you know, one of the shortlisted. So he was against really strong authors, and that's what made it interesting.
He was. And the other one that really sort of tickled my fancy was The Slave Pens by Najwa bin Shatwan, who's a... Was she from Libya?
Libyan.
Yes.
Well, I started reading the book, but it's a bit painful, so I just put it aside for now.
I'll come back to the book that we are reviewing. We are going to come to the end of our Arab World segment now, and then we will come back to more on slavery with the Pulitzer Prize winning The Underground Railroad by Colson Whitehead after this break. Many thanks, Hin, for coming in and sharing Arab World fiction with us this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you. Do stay tuned. We'll be back after this break.
This is Talking of Books here on Dubai Eye 103.8.